Chapter 28. On the second-to-last mission to refuel the Flying Dutchman's depleted tanks, I went along in one of the Condors. Yes, during the time we spent a year flying around the junkyard in the Roach Motel, I had qualified to fly our largest model of dropship, a craft big enough to be considered a small ship like a corvette in some space navies. No, I was not acting as a pilot on this mission because I still was about the least skilled pilot aboard the Flying Dutchman, and I had no experience flying in the thick atmosphere of a gas giant planet. Because our entire mini-fleet of dropships had gotten continuous use in the junkyard, we had to designate one of each model as a hangar queen to be stripped of parts to keep others flying. Even then, we were taking used parts of one dropship to replace the totally worn-out parts of our flight-worthy dropships. That is why we were not taking our Condors as deep as the first time we refueled. We were concerned there had been too much wear and tear on vital components. We very carefully inspected all the vital components before each flight. So, of course, it was a tiny little part we barely thought of that bit us in the ass. More about that later. I was not acting as a pilot, and I was also not annoying the flight crew by sightseeing, because I was part of the drogue control crew. The first time we tried Skippy's crazy plan to extract fuel from the atmosphere of a gas giant, we learned someone needed to manually fly the big fuel collection parachute thingy that was strung between and behind the pair of Condors. Sammy Reed had done that by herself the first time, and the intense concentration needed had exhausted her. On subsequent missions, each ship had two pilots, a relief pilot, and three people to control the drogue parachute. That was more people's lives being put at risk, but lower overall risk, according to our experienced and very cautious lead pilot, Major Desai. She had flown the first mission on this refueling op and proclaimed it was doable. She liked the fact that we would not be flying as deep in the atmosphere this time. My participation in the op was so I could appreciate how difficult it was, so another pilot could get rest while I took the responsibility, and because I very much wanted to get off the ship for a while. Anastasia the sex bot was out of my cabin and back to wherever Skippy had created her. It created it. Damn it, now the beer can had me thinking of that bot as a person. You would understand if you had seen her. She looked disturbingly realistic, so much that if I hadn't seen her aboard, it, if I hadn't seen it, oh, forget it. Anyway, it was a good idea for me to get off the ship for a while. Every time people saw me, they couldn't help laughing, and that was hurting productivity. Yeah, that's the reason I had to get off the ship. I was concerned about the crew not being able to concentrate on work and training. Also, I spent a lot of time hiding in my office or cabin to avoid people. Adams could not even look at me. It got to the point where she was eating at odd times in the galley to avoid running into me. And Skippy? That little shithead was fine. Never better. He still thought he had done a big favor for me, and he hinted he wanted an apology for me rejecting a wonderful gift. The last star in the universe is going to be a cold, dark cinder before he gets an apology from me. We had reached target depth, about 80,000 feet deeper than the first mission of this refueling op had flown. Those ships had reported bad and unpredictable turbulence and had been forced to cut their flights short due to stress on the pilots. I had wholeheartedly agreed with their decision to come back early with their tanks less than 70% full. The last thing I needed was pilots pushing themselves too far because of some macho bullshit. The good news about being 80,000 feet deeper in the thick, toxic atmosphere was the collection apparatus would siphon fuel faster and cut our flight duration by an estimated 40 minutes. The bad news was the air outside the ships created a lot more resistance, so we had to run the engines hotter to compensate. We also had another 80,000 feet to climb on our return flight. And, you know, we were that much closer to the depth at which the atmospheric pressure would crush our ships. Good times. We leveled off and spent 20 minutes verifying every system was working perfectly and that the turbulence was manageable. The air was smoother than the previous flight encountered, but we still hit vicious updrafts and downdrafts that came out of nowhere. Skippy didn't have enough data about this planet to make an accurate model of the air circulation patterns. The pilots of both ships conferred and agreed they were confident in the delicate operation of deploying the drogue chute, so we got started. Strung between both ships was a thin cable we had hooked up in orbit. The cable had enough slack and stretching ability that the ships could fly in a loose formation. If that lead cable snapped, we would have to climb back into orbit to attach another. There was no way to do that while the pair of condors were bouncing around in the atmosphere. The other condor started the process of deploying the drogue chute, and when the thing was about three-quarters unrolled from its reel, disaster struck. We hit an updraft, which was not a problem by itself, but at the same time we got a visit from the screw-up ferry. The hatch from which the chute deployed was on the port side of the condor, and it was a crappy design by the Theranin. Instead of the door retracting in the hull, it popped out slightly and slid forward. This feature demonstrated that big condors were designed as spacecraft first, with considerations for fly-in and atmospheres second. This would not be a problem, except we had used that hatch a lot to deploy safety lines and reel in stuff we wanted from the junkyard. The cables and reels had been inspected, along with the sliding door mechanism, but neither humans nor Skippy's bots took the mechanism completely apart to check on the pin that held the door when it was retracted. That jolt from turbulence was enough to make the worn-out pin snap. The airstream howling past caught the door, and it slid back to slam shut. Or it tried to, because the folded drogue was in the way. The violent impact of the door crushed the tough nanofiber strands of the drogue, and for a couple seconds, the spool kept feeding out the folded drogue inside the bay behind the partly closed door. Then the door, which had slipped off its tracks and gotten bent, broke away. 13 meters of drogue got pulled out all at once, pulled hard because the crushed part of the chute was no longer folded and the air yanked on it. The condor yawed and rolled to port, out of control. Skippy's homemade fuel collection drogue was designed to break away at both ends if stress on the drogue got too strong. The end attached to my condor separated as designed to protect us. Unfortunately, the breakaway part on the other condor's end was still wrapped around the reel, so the reel tore loose, and because it didn't fit through the hatchway, it took part of the hull with it. No longer having a rapidly unfolding parachute pulling it to port made the condor snap abruptly to the right, putting the portside engine intake directly into the chaotic path of the flailing drogue. Part of the drogue got sucked into the intake, wrapped itself around the turbine blades, and jerked the solid reel with it. Before the heavy reel shattered the turbine blades and destroyed that engine, the drogue whipped over and around the hull, the unraveling end being pulled into the starboard engine. The portside engine had zero chance to survive even before the reel came crashing into it at supersonic speed. But the starboard engine was lucky. Either the screw-up ferry missed a golden opportunity, or she wanted to prolong her mischief, because the portside engine survived long enough for its rotating blades to pull back on the drogue. The end that had whipped over the top of the fuselage was already playing havoc with turbine blades on the starboard side, so the lucky part was the drogue was tugged in two directions and tore apart, with the break happening on the starboard side. Only 6 meters of drogue was ingested by the starboard engine, snapping off or bending less than 20% of those turbine blades. That condor began dropping, unable to maintain altitude on one damaged engine. What the? I shut up because answering questions from me would distract the pilots from what they needed to be doing, flying the aircraft. There was one being who boasted a near-infinite capacity to multitask, so I called that asshole beer can. Skippy, what is... Instead of the familiar arrogant tone of Skippy, the not-quite-as-awesome-as-he-thinks-he-is, there was a scratchy recording of a bland female voice.
Your call is important to us. Please hold, and we will answer your call in the order it was received. Thank you for your patience.
I stared at my Z-phone in disbelief.
What the f...
Skippy! Answer me right now, damn it! Busy, Joe. Super-duper busy. He actually sounded distracted. You are never too busy to bug the shit out of me when you want to talk. Sing it if you want to, but I need a sit rep right now. Sing it. Ooh, that is a great... No, it is a terrible idea. What the hell is going on? Oh, fine. It is a fluid situation, Joe. More data is coming in every nanosecond. If you can wait, bad news is not like wine. It does not get better with age. That is a good point. Okay, Lieutenant Reed's condor has suffered the loss of one engine, and the other is badly damaged. It is losing altitude. It took 20 minutes before we had enough info to fully understand the situation, and for Lieutenant Reed to get enough control of his ship that she could talk to us.
Engine 2 is gone. It shredded and tore loose, damaged the tail cone as it went. There is damage to the port side hull. We've lost sensors to see how bad it is. We can tell parts of the outer skin are peeling away.
She took a pause for breath, and when she spoke, her voice was dead calm, relaying purely the facts with no hint of her inner emotions.
Engine 1 is running at 40% power. We tried higher power settings, but the vibration caused the engine controller to throttle back.
Understood, Fireball. I used her call sign, unaware that she was not fond of that pilot nickname. We show you descending at 200 meters per second. Can you confirm? It was a stupid question, but I had to confirm the data link was accurate.
Confirmed.
This time, there was a catch in her voice.
We can't lighten the load. There's nothing to dump overboard. As we get deeper in the atmosphere, I will need to reduce airspeed to reduce stress on the hull. That will increase our sink rate.
Understood. Shit, that time my voice nearly cracked.
Colonel, she asked.
Yes?
This would be a really good time for a monkey-brained idea.
Lieutenant Samantha Sammy Reed was spot on that only a crazy idea could rescue her ship and crew. Her Condor was sinking so fast, there was no time for a rescue attempt from the Dutchman. We needed to do it with our ship and what we had on board. I asked Porter, our lead pilot, for ideas, and he and his team came up with a couple off-the-wall suggestions that were not quite crazy enough to work. We could not attach a line to the stricken ship and winch the crew across the gap. We could not clamp onto the other Condor with ours. The landing skids had no way to attach to the smooth hull of another dropship. Porter then got excited when he remembered an incident during the Korean War and another during Vietnam, when one fighter jet pushed a damaged fighter that had lost power. In Korea, the pilot stuck his fighter's nose cone up the crippled jet's tailpipe and pushed it beyond enemy territory. In Vietnam, the pilot used the windshield of his Phantom jet to push against the tailhook of another Phantom. Those ideas were not practical for our situation, but they did get me thinking. First, Porter made me realize that plenty of humans got wild-ass ideas when they were needed, and it was time for me to stop screwing around and step up my game. Second, he reminded me that dropships had something like a tailhook. They were all equipped with some kind of mechanism that could catch on netting in a docking bay for emergency recovery. Sometimes in combat, a dropship needed to be taken aboard quickly, and there was no time for gentle and precise flying. Instead, the dropship aimed at the open docking bay and flew in, trusting suspensor fields to slow it down and catch it. In my pilot training, I had practiced that maneuver a dozen times. It was nerve-wracking to fly toward an open docking bay, seeing the back wall approaching way too fast and hoping the mysterious, invisible technology of suspensor fields will work correctly. Because it would be foolish to rely on one system to prevent a crash, suspensor fields aboard a Theranan ship had a backup. Netting stretched across the open bay door. This netting was a tough and smart nanofiber that sensed the nose of an incoming dropship and created an opening so the nose didn't crumple on impact. The rest of the netting caught the wings, engine nacelles, and most important, the hooks. Just behind the engines were hooks, either four or six of them depending on the model of dropship. These hooks deployed in a star pattern to catch the netting and bring the dropship to a halt before it damaged the mothership. A crash landing, as we called it, was something we only practiced in the simulator for a very good reason. The crash landing maneuver was rough on biological beings like humans. Supposedly, a properly strapped-in crew of a dropship would survive a crash landing, but it wasn't something we wanted people to experience unless they absolutely had to. The reason I mentioned emergency docking procedures was not for suspensor fields or nanofiber crash netting. It was for the hooks. Even one of those hooks could stop the mass of a dropship traveling up to 30 meters a second. That was a seriously strong hook. The strength of those hooks is why I traded my flight suit for a hard-shell Cristang-powered armor suit.
Joe, are you sure about this?
Skippy. I gave a somewhat shaky thumbs-up sign to the pilots helping me prep the suit. If I was sure about doing this, I wouldn't have asked you to recheck your numbers a half dozen times. Were you wrong?
No, but that is not the point. My calculations confirm the arrestor hooks of your ships are strong enough, that the cables you are using are strong enough, and that the nose landing gear of the other Condor is strong enough. If you can get a cable attached from your hooks to the other ship's nose gear, you will be able to tow it up into orbit.
Probably. Unless you run into bad turbulence, or the pilots lack the skill to...
The pilots are going to do just fine, Skippy.
We'll see about that, since none of the pilots have done this before, trained for it, or even thought about it. If Captain Porter in the lead ship, or Lieutenant Reed in the trailing ship, are not able to fly very smoothly, their actions could set up a vibration in the cable that could...
You told me this super-duper high-tech cable is smart. It has some sort of self-correcting thingy that can help steer it and dampen vibrations.
Yes?
He gave an exasperated sigh. The cable can make adjustments to a certain point. After that, it gets dicey. Anyway, you are missing the point as usual. I am not worried about the equipment or the pilot's skill. I am worried about you, Dum-Dum.
Skippy, I waved to the pilots and closed the airlock door behind me.
Thank you. It's nice to know that you care.
Oh, I meant I'm worried you will screw this up and get a bunch of people killed, but let's go with the caring thing if you like.
Why are you such an asshole?
Hey, I wouldn't have to worry at all if you weren't such a dumb monkey.
This is all your fault anyway.
Me?
The airlock finished cycling and I opened the outer door into the back ramp area of the Condor, hooking a safety line onto my belt.
You designed and built that crappy fuel drogue, and you are a trouble magnet.
This is the first time you've been on a refueling mission,
and the first time we have had a problem.
Coincidence?
I don't think so.
Totally your fault.
We should never have...
Oh, damn it, Joe.
His voice broke, and he was blubbering.
If something bad happens to you, I don't know what I will do.
Gee, Skippy. Now I was finding it hard to talk.
I would miss you, too.
It's good to... I mean, I do know what I will do. I'll train another monkey to replace you, but damn, what a pain in the ass that will be.
Skippy, I shook my head ruefully.
Can you save your heartwarming motivational talk for after I'm aboard the Dutchman?
Yeah, I'm gonna be kinda busy.
I was flying feet first behind the lead Condor, being literally jerked around at the end of a cable that was attached to my legs. Because I needed to see and grab hold of the nose gear of the trailing ship, I had to be facing backwards. The only way I could steer was with my arms. It was like skydiving backwards. To make the experience extra super-duper fun and easy for everyone, Reed's Condor was now sinking at 300 meters per second, and that rate was accelerating. At the controls of our ship, Porter had to match Reed's sink rate. He also had to fly above her altitude, with my weight making the cable droop down. Porter also had to adjust to turbulence and try to think how an up or downdraft would affect the trailing ship. For her part, Reed could not simply watch the lead ship and adjust. She had to anticipate Porter's moves. All I had to do was get whipped around on the end of a cable, find Reed's Condor, bang into it without killing myself, and loop the cable around the front landing gear. If you want to visualize what I was doing, rent one of the airport disaster movies. I think it was Airport 75, or maybe Airport 78, whatever. It's the one with the actor who played Jesus in an old movie. No, that's not right. Maybe he played John the Baptist. I know it wasn't John the Methodist or John the Presbyterian. Wait, I got it. He played Moses. I remember that because we were living in Boston when that movie came on TV, and during the scene when Moses parts the Red Sea, my father said that if Moses wanted a real challenge, he could try parting Boston traffic during rush hour. Anyway, in that airport movie, the actor needs to go from an airplane into a big jetliner to fly it, because the pilots of the jetliner are dead. He is dangling on the end of a cable, and he somehow has to fit through a broken windshield. He gets his legs in, and the flight attendants pull him into the cockpit. My point is, that guy had it easy. It was a clear day, so he could see what he was doing, whereas I was flying through clouds of hydrogen sulfide and other nasty toxic stuff, and I couldn't see a damn thing without the synthetic vision provided by my suit sensors. He had help, while I was by myself. Also, the aircraft I was trying to hook onto wasn't flying nice and level on autopilot. It was sinking at an increasing rate. The force of gravity on me was 17% greater than on Earth, and the lower we dropped, the greater the effect of gravity would be. Okay, yes, you there, Mr. Nerdface, in the back with your hand up, because you are so smart, I know that before the gravity becomes a big problem, we would have fallen so deep the atmospheric pressure would crush the Condor, but the extra gravity was already making it more difficult for me to judge my aim. Imagine you are shooting free throws in gravity that is 17% higher than normal. You have probably shot thousands of free throws in normal gravity, and your eye-hand coordination, your reflexes, and your muscle memory are all set up for normal gravity. Suddenly, you have to put a bit more effort into shooting the ball, and the arc it follows is steeper than you expected. It was like that, as I awkwardly tried to steer myself at the end of the cable. My first attempt to contact the target was almost a disaster. I came in from the right, overcorrected, and was about to smack into the hull hard enough to dent it and kill me.
Fortunately for me, the crew aboard the lead Condor recognized the danger and reeled in the cable enough for me to zip past the nose so fast it was a blur. "Sorry," I called out as I tried to swing back to the center.
"No problem, Colonel," Reed assured me. "Take your time out there."
"Thanks, not too much time, sir."
"Affirmative."
After my near disaster, we kept the cables short enough that I couldn't hit anything, and I concentrated on keeping myself centered. The 12th attempt was going well enough for me to call for more cable. I was below and in front of the target, and we had gotten lucky with the turbulence. The air was smooth. I had gotten better at free-flying on the end of the cable. We tried letting out the cable so I could slip under the Condor's nose. It was tricky because the air pattern close to the ship was different and it pushed me away.
"Okay, I know how to do it now," I advised after the crew retracted the cable again.
For the first time since I stumbled out the back ramp of my Condor, I was confident this crazy scheme might actually work. Until then, truthfully, I had launched this rescue operation more because I felt we had to do something than expecting we could save the crew of that crippled ship.
"Next time, let the cable out."
The trailing Condor dropped like a rock in front of me, sinking so quickly it was now below me.
"Reed, what happened?"
"Reed."
"Joe,"
Skippy's voice broke in. "Lieutenant Reed is extremely busy. She just lost 3 more fan blades and vibration in the turbine was so bad she had to reduce throttle to 12%. No, now she has gone to 7%.
"7? Well, shit, that's practically idling."
Reed's Condor had sunk almost below range of my suit's sensors, and my synthetic vision switched over to a feed from the lead ship.
"Porter, follow her. We can't lose her."
"Colonel, this is problematic,"
Porter responded, and I could feel myself dropping faster.
"The target is now falling in 1,900 meters per minute. The air resistance on you prevents you from falling that fast."
"Shit."
He was right, I hadn't thought of that. At the end of the cable, I was now above the lead Condor, and it was sinking faster than I was.
"Screw this," I muttered to myself.
I had been flying in a belly-down position. Now I tucked into a head-down posture, my speed picking up rapidly, and soon I was at the level of the lead ship, then dropping below again.
"More cable," I ordered.
"Joe, while this is a heroic action, it..."
"Nothing heroic about it, Skippy. I can always get reeled back in and fly safely up to the Dutchman. My point, dum-dum, is that the only way you can fall quickly enough to catch Reed's ship is to fly in head-down position. In that position, you can't fly under her ship and contact the landing gear."
"Shit. Double shit. He was right. I hadn't thought of that either. Damn, I was a total freaking moron. What the hell was wrong with me? Why couldn't I think ahead and..."
"Reed! Fireball!"
"Here, Colonel. The turbine is tearing itself apart. I can't..."
"I know. Invert. Fly upside down."
There was the slightest hesitation, then a surprised,
"Sir?
I'm coming in above you and I can't get to the landing gear from here, so flip over."
"Oh. Got it. This thing won't fall any faster upside down."
She did it.
"Porter, I need..."
"Doing it now, Colonel,"
he answered before I could finish because he had excellent situational awareness and knew what I planned to do.
"Sink rate is now 2,300 meters per minute."
Crap. In the thick air, I had trouble plummeting that fast, even tucked in a head-down position. The belly of the upside-down Condor approached with agonizing slowness while I fretted I was too late. Then it loomed in front of me, and I had to frantically roll upright onto my belly and spread my arms to slow down. In my third consecutive dumbass move, I had failed to consider the falling Condor would create a pocket of air above it. When I fell into that shadow, I dropped like a rock. Nothing I could do could slow me down quickly enough. I belly-flopped onto the Condor's belly and hit hard, my suit absorbing much of the shock with airbags inflating inside to keep me from being knocked unconscious.
"I'm okay. I'm okay,"
I wheezed, out of breath. The rebound had me hitting again, and I was sliding down over the side, flailing my arms and legs to stop my fall. "Listen. Okay, yes, it was pure luck that one of my arms wrapped around the landing gear. I hadn't even seen the thing. But when the cable end automatically looped several times around the gear, and the nanofibers basically welded the cable securely in place, there was a triumphant whoop from the lead ship's crew, followed by grateful and excited shouting from Reed and her crew.
"You did it. Colonel, you did it. Thank you, thank you, thank you,"
Reed gushed. Hey, no way could I tell anyone it was an accident that I accomplished the mission, right?
And no problem, Reed, any time. Porter, you got her? Cable is secure, Colonel. But now we have another problem. The computer is telling me that to tow the other ship, I need an airspeed that will overstress the cable and cause it to snap. Breaking my dumbass pattern, I had an answer to that dilemma. Forget airspeed, Porter. Both the condors are empty. Your thrust-to-weight ratio is plenty for a pure vertical ascent, even carrying another ship. Reduce your airspeed and lift us straight up. When we clear the atmosphere, you can flatten our course and build up speed to get us into a stable orbit.
Sir, that's not...
Skippy broke in again.
Captain Porter, Joe is correct. The pilot's operating handbook for the Condor will tell you that maneuver is impossible because the Theranin who programmed the flight control system never considered a wild-ass stunt like this. But it can be done. I just uploaded new software into your computer.
Huh, was all Porter said in response.
Apparently, the Theranin who designed that dropship never met an ignorant monkey.
Skippy chuckled. Colonel, I am ashamed I didn't think of that. Porter apologized.
Don't be, I replied as I felt the condor I was attached to slowing, with the cable going taut. Our rate of descent was being canceled. When I started flight training, Major Desai told me my best asset was my total lack of experience. I had no ingrained habits to unlearn. You naturally think of lift in terms of airspeed.
Yes, sir, Porter agreed. But I won't do that again. Rate of descent is now zero. Commencing climb.
With Reed's condor dangling from its nose on the end of a cable, she had to use thrusters to stop us from spinning like a top. We were climbing, and at first all was going according to plan. Then, as our rate of climb increased, I started getting bashed against the hull. It was getting rough.
Hey, Porter, I appreciate the enthusiasm, but slow down. I'm getting tenderized here.
Colonel, we don't have the fuel for that. If I go any slower, we won't make orbit. I can't fly vertically all the way up, he announced.
Shit, I grunted from a particularly hard rap against the condor's belly.
This is a problem.
Joe, Skippy's voice sounded worried.
Captain Porter is correct. The fuel state is growing critical. Climbing at such a steep angle is consuming fuel rapidly.
If we don't slow down, I bashed my helmet again and was seeing stars in my vision. I'm going to be in very big trouble out here.
Joe. Skippy scolded me. I am very disappointed in you. You rescued Lieutenant Reed's crew, but now your life is in danger because of a little breeze?
It is not a little breeze, Skippy.
Reed made a suggestion.
If I open a side door, could you get to it?
No way, I reported unhappily. It is too far.
Sir,
she asked after I was silent for a long moment. Give me a minute here, I'm thinking.
Hey, open your main landing gear doors, Reed.
Good idea, sir,
she agreed with enthusiasm.
It was not easy getting to one of the main landing gear because the airstream wanted to keep me in the center of the condor's belly, but Reed helped by skillfully and gently tilting her condor by using thrusters, keeping a watchful eye. She did not overstress the cable. With her help, I slid back and grabbed onto one of the sturdy main landing gear, then tucked myself into the bay where the gear normally rested in flight.
I'm in. Let's be clear about something, Fireball. Do not retract this landing gear. Understood?
With me mostly protected from the screeching airstream, we climbed out of the atmosphere and into a low orbit. Once there, the crew and I transferred to Porter's ship, and I made a quick decision to discard the damaged condor. We could have tried bringing the Dutchman down to rendezvous with us, but at low altitude, she could not jump away in case we got ambushed, and the crippled ship would have struggled to get into a docking bay on thrusters alone. So we remotely fired nose thrusters to slow it down, and by the time we were safely aboard our fine ship, the broken condor was burning up in the thick atmosphere. The fuel collection upended with the Dutchman's tanks only 63% full, and that worried me. But it was enough to get us to Earth with a comfortable reserve. So, we considered ourselves lucky to escape without loss of life, and jumped away to our next dangerous adventure.